And joining us is Matt Welsh from the Trial Files to review all the weekend's action. How are you, Matt?
Very well, Nadia. How are you?
Extremely well. What did you take out of the weekend?
Yeah, interesting day. Obviously, we saw a couple of short price favourites in Nature Strip and Cliff's Edge go under at Caulfield. The track race quite slowly, given the good three rating. I think it was probably on the worst side of that, closer to a good four. But good racing. The track raced it very well. You could win from pretty well anywhere. There were horses win up on speed and from the back of the field. And Sprightly Lass won in lane one, and there were winners out in lanes eight and nine. So I think it was a fair track. Obviously, restricted racing being the Vobis day, but fantastic prize money for the owners and trainers, and of course the sales day yesterday to go with it. So it's a good celebration of owners and breeders in this state. And look, I think it's the form's a little bit mixed going forward, but a couple that can probably go to South Australia and Queensland in coming weeks and be competitive in some of the better races.
Definitely. We've got the Tab Sally Snow with us. Of course, Sally's been joining us over the last couple of weeks. She's been fielding in the ring in Sydney through the championships for the Tab with Fixed Odds, and she is with us to give us another insight into the spectacular day of racing. How was it, Sally?
Yeah, it was a great day. There was a bit of sweet moment for me. Now I'm going to be back in the office next Saturday, of course. But no, I had a lot of fun out there for the 3 weeks. It was, it was very enjoyable, and it was interesting to see how the track compared to the week prior out at Randwick. It was a lot less windy. Obviously, it was a strong headwind the week before, up to I think it reached 40 kilometres an hour by race nine last week, and was definitely an advantage to the swoopers. And fast forward a week to Saturday, where the fence was the place to be, and the track obviously raced very fast, and they ran lightning times, and it was very firm out there.
That's a really good point, Sally. We saw two track records on Saturday, I think, from recollection. The track obviously did race fast. In your experience up at Randwick, is it hard to run leaders down when the track's that firm and there's no wind historically?
Historically, yes, and that proved the case on Saturday. I think there was a couple of big runs. Moss Trip was one that came from behind, which made its run look very good against the bias. But yeah, typically it is difficult to make up ground there.
And how was had the Ledger fair on Saturday with the bookies in front once again? You've obviously had a couple of good days out on course. No doubt the Tab are extremely happy with you heading what you've done out there. Did you have another winning day on Saturday?
I didn't. The punters got me. We back in the office, the boys held the fort together and had a good day here. But no, I was in front all the way to the last race, and they got me on the last.
And getting into the action, the main race of the day was the All Age Stakes, which was taken out by Trapeze Artist, who was so impressive in the TJ Smith the start prior, and backed that up with another win on Saturday. I think only started favourite for maybe the second time in his career. Was that correct?
Yeah, that's right. It usually goes around at a lot longer odds, and it was, to be honest, it was a tricky runner to lay for us, especially late in betting. We had a lot of our customers malting up a few of those shorties in Melbourne into Trapeze Artist. So the horse actually went around a winner for us, would you believe? But it was very, very impressive in saying that there was a few big runs out of the race. And the margin was only small. I'd say to go around longer odds if you ran the race again.
And who do you think were the horses to follow going forward out of the All Age Stakes? We saw Le Romain run second, Showtime third, and Hartnell, of course, back in fourth. Is there anything we can follow heading towards Queensland in the coming weeks?
Oh, look, nothing that stands out from that race. Obviously, the second two behind it were good runs, but Tom Melbourne was a little impositioned in the straight. Maybe Eden Hartnell were big runs out of the race.
And the other group one on Saturday was the Champagne Stakes. You had a huge clean-up on El Dorado Dreaming when it won at 100-1 two starts back. Look, the unlucky runner on Saturday, the race was taken out by the Mick Price-trained Seabrook, narrowly beat Bondi. How did you guys fare on this race, and who were the punters keen to back?
It was a small winner for us, the winner Seabrook. I think you mentioned El Dorado Dreaming. It proved that the week prior or 2 weeks prior that it wasn't a fluke when it won at 150s, because it came out, and I'd say it was maybe the one of the runs on the entire card. It was third at $7.50, but it was definitely a huge run. The interest out of the race was pretty well spread. There was money for Outrageous, even though it eased a little bit in betting. And there was a lot of money for Bondi. It was probably the best backed runner in the race. And I gapped it on course, so I was very lucky and happy to see it.
just on Outrageous, I would have thought that ease was probably because of where the horse mapped, hadn't really shown a huge amount of tactical speed, and if leaders were winning, probably why punters took a set against it.
Yeah, spot on. It was a little bit impositioned in the back half of the straight, and it was kind of trying to find a good spot, but it was always going to get back, and you know, therefore the punters kind of jerried early. It's one of those tricky things where because there was so much bias on the day, whether you bet early into these markets or hold off till race day, and I think the punters who probably waited were on the right runners on the day.
And the Champagne Stakes probably draws to a close the big two-year-old season up in Sydney, Sally. From your perspective, we've seen some great performances. Obviously, Esther Jarb winning the Golden Slipper, written by down here in Melbourne. I've seen El Dorado Dreaming really storm onto the scene late in the two-year-old season. Is there one that you think stands out in its age group or pretty even crop across the board?
Yeah, look, pretty even crop across the board. As I said, that runner from El Dorado Dreaming was a huge run and probably the one to follow. Esther Jarb's a personal favourite of mine. I think it's a freak of a horse. But yeah, nothing that massively stands out. I'd say one of the earlier winners, what was it, Higher Ground, that won in race four. I'd say that might go on to win the Queensland Derby. I think we'll be putting up those markets on Monday next week, and I'd say that'd be going up for a favourite and probably a horse to follow in the Queensland winter.
And just summarising the day, Osborne Bulls in the last. Did you get much out of it running second as a pretty firm favourite there? Obviously, one of the biggest runs of the day, slashed home in about 32 and change, I think, the last 600, but did go under. How was the result in the last with Tribal Wisdom winning?
Yeah, huge result for Tab. I think in the last 10 minutes of betting, every 9 out of 10 bets were for the favourite. So we were very lucky to get it beat, and it was a massive run. So, we definitely ended up on top in the last race.
And that's amazing. In spite of it, at 4:32 p.m., which was, about half an hour before the race, was $2.10. It's eased out to jump $2.30, yet that still equates to 90% of the pool. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. It was definitely the one that they just wanted to be on. Every punter was on it, in multis, in singles, and even though it eased slightly late and there was money for the winner, it was definitely by far the best backed, and to be fair, probably should have won the race.
And was there anything else, a note across the card from a betting perspective, that stood out? Any well-backed runners, any runners that maybe eased quite significantly?
I'd say the shock for us was probably Trapeze Artist. It was one that, we just found trickier to lay, and looking now back at the book, and we had three losers in the race. It was a bit of an odd-looking book in that Tom Melbourne was a loser, as was Hartnell was definitely the worst way, and we had Brave Smash as a loser also. So it was just one of those races where, I didn't feel very confident when they were going into the gates in terms of how we positioned everything, but we obviously got the result.
Sally, just looking long term, now that you've been there on track for a big carnival like this, and we've discussed over the last few weeks how, look, it is a different clientele, the on-course punter in particular, in the Sydney ring. Is this something the Tab are going to be looking at going forward, having more of an on-track presence?
We'd love to, yeah. We got a lot out of those 3 weeks at Randwick, and as I said before, when we kicked off, and the reason why we were trying to do that was to bring more people back on track and really try and expose that, not only the great atmosphere, but also the value proposition out there, because, you know, as you said, there are some really shrewd players in the Sydney ring, and for us to be there and compete with the best was, something important for us as a brand and something that we'd love to be part of moving forward, not only in Sydney, but if we had the opportunity in Melbourne, we'd certainly take that also.
And, Sally, just speaking about the 3 days you were out there, is there a race that stands out as A, the biggest result, and B, the biggest hit, the biggest losing race? What was your biggest result, and what was the worst result on the stand?
Biggest result was Red Zell getting beat. And who won that race again?
That was one. Trapeze Artist.
Trapeze Artist, yeah, of course. I was thinking Trapeze Artist, and probably Trapeze Artist was my worst result. It was one that I mentioned before that we were trying to lay back here because we had so many losers in the book outside of that. And because I was trying to stay around a really similar price to where we were off course, I was forced to kind of be top odds in the ring trapeze artist. So, yeah, I was definitely top odds, and I think in the Sydney betting ring on that runner, and it was probably, yeah, by far the worst way for the entire 3 weeks, but equally, it did me a lot of favours 2 weeks prior.
Just talking about your response to Nadia before and sort of taking on the big punters, what's the mood like in the ring? Are you sort of eyeballing people, trying to work out what runners they're looking at and trying to get a feel for who they're going to come and launch at? I mean, it's obviously a skill trying to read the people in the ring and how things are going to unfold.
Yeah, for sure. You know, like the half a dozen heads that are, you know, probably some of the bigger players. And, yeah, as much as I'm trying to focus on being the right price, I'd say my time's equally split between, you know, the odds I'm betting and then also trying to pinpoint what those people are doing. So usually I'd either start at one end of the ring and go the other, and trying to look at what runners they're looking at on the board and read a bit of body language and even when they're on the phone to people, you know, trying to catch a bit of that also. It's a big part of it, and if you can try and be one step ahead of them and as they're walking towards you, there's no kind of better feeling when you can kind of turn one off and preempt what they're going to do. And equally, it's tricky to try and write the right bets. I know I was out there in race three trying to lay Dothraki, and I turned a punter away and bet them to win 6,000 when they actually asked to win a lot more, but and I was a bit kicking myself after the race. But in saying that, it's always easy after it, isn't it?
It is Dothraki.
Sorry, say again.
I said it is Dothraki. He does have that stigma about him.
True. It did. But it did look like it was going to win, didn't it?
It did.
And managed to fall up short again. But yeah, no, it's great fun out there, and I learn a lot from the experience. Part of being in this game is making sure that you can always get something out of each meeting and learn from your mistakes and try and figure out what you did well and you know, incorporate that more into what you do moving forward.
Well, Sally, it's been great you being a part of the program over the championships, and I'm sure we'll see a lot more presence Australia-wide through carnivals. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Nadia. I'll see you, Matt.
See you, Sally.
There's Sally Snow from the Tab joining us on our review of all the action from the weekend. Of course, she's been fielding on track for tab.com.au with the fixed odds through the championships. We're going to take a break. This is Winners on RSN 927. When we return, we'll review all the action from Caulfield. And it's now 26 to 11 on this Monday edition of Winners as we get into the review of the nine race program on Super Vobis Day out at Caulfield with the Trial Files, Matt Welsh. Matt, this meeting has really worked, hasn't it? There's massive prize money on offer. I know that a lot of the hot pot favourites ended up going under throughout the program, but there are a lot of depth to these races, hence some of the mixed results.
Yeah, there is a bit of depth, Nadia. I think it's certainly growing in prominence as time goes on. It's only been around for a couple of years from memory, so no doubt in 10 or so years' time, it'll be one of the more preeminent race days that we have in Victoria. So it is growing slowly. Still, you know, there's still a few roadblocks in the way for some of the better horses for mine. The fields do fall away a little bit quickly, and you know, but what we saw was even though you know, some of the horses had huge advantages at the ratings and got in very well at the weights, they were turned over. So it was good competitive racing. And as I said, I think there's a couple of horses we can follow going forward into both South Australia and Queensland, where the carnivals kick off in those two states in earnest over the coming weeks.
Well, we've got the first race. This was a 1,400-metre fillies and mares open. Ended up being taken out by the favourite, who had pretty good support in Venture Motion.
Yeah, she did. She was $2 at 9 a.m. and ended up jumping $2.60. So I suppose she was a little bit easy there. The money really came for Summer Glen, the Mick Price trained filly. She was $10 into $5.50. And she was one of those runners who was going to push forward, and they did try to lead from the outside gate. So I suspect that that's why the money came for her, Summer Glen. And the other one who had some support, Nadia, was Honey Esprit, who was $14 into $10.
French Emotion, she'd had the two runs prior this preparation. What did you make of her performance?
Yeah, it was a good win. I mean, she did really what you'd expect her to. She was one of those runners who had a huge ratings advantage over her rival. She'd been unlucky at Bendigo leading into this race. She was good first up behind a very smart sprinter in Key Lister, trained by Darren Weir down the straight. So there was no faulting her form. She got a gun run here. They went very quickly up the hill because The nominated leader really was My True Love from the Waterhouse Bot Yard. She did take up the running, but she had to work hard because Honey Esprit pushed her. And as I mentioned, Summer Glen came over from that wide draw, gate 10. Couldn't cross them, but continued to work early. So they went at a good tempo, and Benny Mellum just got French Emotion into a lovely spot, about a couple of lengths off the speed, but 3 to 4 lengths off the speed. And from there, it was only bad luck that was going to beat her. So great ride. As I said, she had a clear class edge over her rivals and did the job well. I thought Lady Selkirk did a good job to run home into third. She's certainly trending in the right direction. And Evie Lil, who's finished fifth here, ran the second best last 1,200 of the day, drifted back to last early. I thought that was a really good performance. And will be a runner I'll be keen to follow. She was first up off a small break heading into that, so I think she'll improve, and she does have very good soft track stats, so if she was to head to somewhere like Warrnambool, or as the tracks get wetter, she's going to be hard to beat in coming starts.
We have a look at race two. This was the 1600 metre open. The market here really sort of focused around Widgie Turf, who of course has got the brilliant overall record, and also well in the market too, was Sword of Light. What were some of the key fluctuations?
There wasn't really much, to be honest, Nadia. Widgie Turf was $2.90 out to $3.50. Most of the others held their mark or drifted. The ultimate winner, Waging War, who was over from Adelaide, has gone around at $8.50, but didn't attract a huge amount of interest. It was, as I said, a very quiet betting race, and I think the fact that six of the seven runners started $9 or under just suggested how open it was.
It was. Well, let's talk a little bit about the winner, Adelaide Horse, who I've got a pretty good handle on, who won at huge odds first up from a break and then went well and only narrowly defeated in a race won by Manuel on the 7 day backup. And this horse looks to be trending extremely well, this preparation. It's sort of reaching new peak ratings.
Yeah, he certainly does, Nutty. I think that one of the most prominent features of this race was how slowly they went out in front. They went through the first 400 metres in 25.97 and the first 600 in about 39.4 seconds. So they've absolutely walked here. So for a horse going from 1,200 up to 1,600 metres like Waging War, that really suited him. What I also noticed about this horse was he just dropped his head and relaxed. He's obviously a horse who's heading to staying trips down the track, and just loved the way he relaxed. And how slow they went was evidenced by the fact that this horse reeled off the best last 600 and 400 metre splits of the day. So it was a total sit sprint race. I think, as you say, he's trending in the right direction. Wouldn't mind seeing him have another run maybe around the 1600, 1800 metre mark before he steps up again. But really good performance. Widgie Turf came off a really high-pressure race where he was dominant last start over 1,400 metres, ran very good late splits there in that race at Caulfield the start prior. This was just a totally different scenario for him, very slow tempo, getting out to 1,600 metres. Didn't quite quicken as well as he did the start prior off the hard tempo, but ran okay. Sort of Light's gone okay back in third. Sosie Bonds getting a bit long in the tooth, had every possible settling third with the run of the race and dropping out, and Turn It Around as well, who led them up on speed and, you know, I think was entitled to run better than it did, finishing 7.5 lengths off them after a soft run on pace.
We have a look at race three. This was the two-year-old race, which was worth $300,000 in prize money. As you would expect, it was a fairly deep race as far as the market. What were some of the changes?
Yeah, the big move was for Des Moines, trained by the Michael Moroney yard, was $10 early in the morning, ended up jumping $4.60, and that support was both as soon as the minimum bet laws kicked in at 9 a.m, but also they went again when the on-course markets kicked in. So it was a really good go for Des Moines, who ultimately would finish fifth. Tycoon Lily from the Hayes yard, who was on debut, was $10 into $8.50, so she'd attracted a little bit of support. And big drifter was the toppy Yulong February, who ended up dropping out and running poorly, but was $13 out to $35. And the ultimate winner did jump favourite, but there's basically no move in betting, was Thrillster, who went around $4.60.
Let's talk about the victory of the two-year-old filly Thrillster, who did have two prior race win starts, one of them culminating in a win last time out at Bendigo off of a solid lead tempo.
Yeah, this is a serious two-year-old race, Nadia. I think this is one of the races to follow of the day. Firstly, they went out ridiculously hard. The Mick Price-trained galloper Vuni Valu led them up. They went out in 23.52 seconds for the first 400, which is absolutely low-flying. The horses who finished, or the first four in the run, have finished 12th, 13th, 15th, and also Des Moines, who was up on speed, has finished 5th. So, firstly, I think the run at Des Moines was good. She's a filly who's going to win races, but this horse, Thrillster, was excellent. Got a really good run, about 5 or 6 lengths off the speed, but put them away quickly. Has now won 2 on end. I think she's a really smart horse. They ran quicker time here than Rich Charm did over the 1,200 metres later in the day, and you don't often see the two-year-olds run quicker time than the open-class horses. Throughout the Blue Diamond series here at Caulfield, we didn't see them do that at all. So great performance. Obviously set up by a fast early speed, but you still have to run the time. Socialising, who finished back in 6th, I thought that was an excellent run, is a horse who she's a filly going to really appreciate 1,400 metres and maybe even further in time. She finished off very well. Golden Script did well to finish 2nd. And one here from the Matthew Brown yard, Mr. Exclusive. I think it was a really good debut. It can go to a maiden and be winning next start. Really good performance there. But strong race, Nadia, and I think we can follow the form with some confidence.
Okay, so it looks to be a good race, that for two-year-olds. The fourth race was over 2,000 metres, and the market here had Kiwia, a short price favourite. You ended up jumping odds on.
Yeah, Kiwia did end up jumping odds on, was $2.20 into $1.80, and pretty much the only runner they wanted to back. The second favourite, Dodging Bullets, was very easy, $4.60 out to $7. And Self-Sense was steady at around the $17 mark and would ultimately win this race, Nadia.
Well, let's talk a bit about the winner of Self-Sense, who did, as you mentioned, start at a big price.
Yeah, he certainly did. Again, the feature of this race was the slow tempo, much like race two. They've totally walked through the early sections of the race. That did not suit Kiwia, who was bailed away on the inside. I think Brad Rewilla here, who was just a victim of circumstances. There was absolutely nothing he could do once he was buried away on the inside, which was where this horse was always going to be. I think the hope that punters had, and certainly that I had, was there was looked to be a bit of speed engaged in the race with Blue Jangles going forward, Floral Fever, and also a horse like Welcome Striker. But ultimately, I think a lot of people mapped that early speed and they went very slowly. So it certainly didn't suit Kiwia. As I said, Brad Rewilla had no real choice. He couldn't jump over them, and he was a good thing beaten. He should have won the race, but he hasn't. And just testament to how slowly they went, Self-Sense has actually come home quicker than Rich Charm did in the 1,200-metre race later in the day. He was coming off a last start hurdle win, his first go over the obstacles, back to the 2,000 metres in a 7-day turnaround. So that hurdle start has clearly sharpened this horse up. I'd suggest he could go to the Warner Bull Cup and be very hard to beat. I'm not sure if he's going to go there or back over the sticks, but really good performance. And he was coming off a fast Mornington Cup run the start prior, so he's got a really solid grounding now wherever he heads going forward. I'd be wary following Kiwia if the horse went up in distance. I think it's only had the 3 runs this campaign and essentially had a barrier trial there. So either, well, obviously Darren Weir's more than capable of pumping plenty of fitness into the horse between now and its next start, but I'd just be a little bit wary of the unlucky runner Kiwia going forward.
We have a look at race 5, a 3-year-old 1,100 metre race. Well, the betting was all about Nature Strip, who ended up starting at a short odds on favourite.
Yeah, he did. He was $1.90 into $1.70. The winner, Sam's Image, was $31 out to $81, so very little support for him. And there was also very good support for Deprive. The Godolphin-trained runner was $4.40 into $3.50. So they really honed in on the two favourites. And this was one punters certainly lamented at the end of the day.
Well, let's talk a little bit about his performance. Well, they elected to sort of ride him a little bit off speed. We have discussed him in the past, how he had a bit of a tendency to hang in. He just looked a little lost at various stages, but he still rallied very well late.
Nature Strip, yeah, he did. Look, it's an interesting one. I've gone back and had a look at his replays of his previous first up runs. Now, One of them was at Mornington over 1,000. The middle one was at Sandown over 1,000. Of course, Saturday at Caulfield over 1,100 metres. And he's always had a tendency to be keen. The difference at his first two runs is he was allowed to stride up early. He wasn't restrained to race in behind them. He also drew wider alleys, so he was out in clean air. So a bit of a different scenario on Saturday. I also went back and watched his jump out at Caulfield leading into this, and he was keen in his jump out for the first 100 metres, but as soon as his jockey, who I think was Craig Williams in the jump out, gave him his head, he settled. And I suspect on Saturday that if he had been allowed to stride and settle up in behind the leader, he probably wins this race. He probably settles a little bit better. But that's all easy to say from here, Nadia. In hindsight, his run was excellent either way you look at it. He's clearly a horse with his quirks. He's had some well-documented breathing issues, I believe. But wherever he heads second up Nature Strip, he's going to be very hard to beat. I think that'll just take the edge off him. He'd only had the one trial going into it, so he's naturally going to settle a little bit better second up. But all honours with the winner, Sam's Image. This horse has burnt the candle at both ends, went out hard. Those who were up on speed alongside the horse dropped out and ran, you know, well back in the field. So it was a good win. Did it at both ends, as I say. Evidence of that was just how slowly he went the last 200 metres, but the race was all over by that point. I think we can probably keep following Sam's Image because he just makes his own luck up on speed and is back in form, obviously, now. Vane Stream did a good job to hang on and run third, sort of riding close to that speed. And Miss Vixen's a horse flying, again aided by a strong tempo out in front, but hit the line well to run fourth, Nadia. But I think Nature Strip's still up to Group 1 standard over in Adelaide going forward, and I certainly wouldn't drop off as a result of Saturday.
We then go to race six. This was the three-year-old event, 1,600 metres. The market, we had another odds-on favourite here who failed to run a place in Cliff's Edge.
Yeah, we did. He was $1.65 into $1.55, and he started very similar price on the exchange. So he was firm across the board. There was absolutely no indication from a market perspective that he was going to put in the performance he did. Street Chic was also well backed as second favourite, $8.50 into $5.50. While both first and second over the line, Mohammedaeus and Temple of Bell drifted. Mohammedaeus was $18 out to $23, and Temple of Bell $10 out to $14.
Well, we need to discuss the performance of the favourite because that was the real talking point out of the race. When you have a horse go around at such a short price and can't run a place, so what did you make of him?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's easy to say in hindsight, but the horse was 2,000 metres back to 1,600 metres, and, you know, this has to have been an afterthought for him. He's been competing in Group 1s, the highest level. I would have thought that the prize money here on offer has just lured them with such a great weight scale for Cliff's Edge. Lou would just have one more run, and Darren Weir's a master of getting another run or two out of a horse each campaign, but the jockey noted that he felt the horse was over the top, Jamie Mott, and the horse will now be spelled. The parade information that I got on Saturday was that he paraded a little bit below where he has in the past, Nadia, so that would suggest that he may have come to the end of his campaign. But he had an easy time, relatively easy time of it up on speed, even though he was led by Elite Drake. It was at a tempo very comfortable for a horse like Cliff's Edge. So when you go and do this horse's form for his next campaign, when he comes back after a spell, I just put a pen through this run because it was too bad to be true. He was beaten 3.9 lengths, and yeah, it was well below his best. They didn't run overly strong time here, but that was the theme of the day. Both Mohammedaeus, who was unlucky at Bendigo last start, and Temple of Bell, who was second up off a decent spell. These are horses we can follow going forward. I assume Temple of Bell might be heading to something in Adelaide or Queensland in the coming weeks and months. Probably should have won this race. Has had six starts now for three trainers, so hopefully the owners stick with Tony McAvoy now because the horse is going well. And I think it can be followed up to 2,000 metres. Mohammedaeus did a good job from the back of the field. They didn't break any records late. I think it was about the 54th best last 800 of the day. So certainly wasn't rattling to the line, but is a horse who'd been unlucky at Bendigo the start prior and can be followed. And once again, Pure Scott's done a good job, and she's a filly who's going well but just doesn't win much, Nadia. So Look, Cliff's Edge clearly ready for a break is what I'd say out of this race.
Got a race 7, listed 1,100 metre race. The market ended up jumping favourite here, Sprightly Lass.
Yeah, she did, and she was very well backed in the last 10 or 15 minutes, and punters just, or especially the big punters, love to hone in on these horses who put themselves up on speed, can run fast sectionals, and that's exactly what Sprightly Lass did. Very interesting drift on a couple of runners here. First up, Santa Ana Lane. The toppy was $8 out to $16. And Property, who we know is a well-performed galloper, I think was having its first start for the new stable, having formerly been trained by Robert Smurden, was $5 out to $9 and ran a long last. So there are a few warning signs there early. And the other good dealer support was for Bonds Away, number 3, who was $5 into $3.70, Nadia, and the two best-backed runners ran the Quinella, Sprightly Lass and Bonds Away.
They did. What did you think of the winner?
Yeah, Sprightly Lass, they went at a beautiful tempo for this filly. I think the only question mark on her was whether, only question mark was probably whether she'd struggle to get the 1,100. She'd never won at the trip. It always, her wins had all come over 955 or 1,000, but just a lovely Dwayne Dunn ride, rated her to perfection, held her up for quite a while in the straight. You'll see Bonds Away actually loomed up and looked like he was going to go past Sprightly Lass, but she'd just been so well rated in front that there was plenty left in the kitty for Dwayne Dunn over the final 200, and a good win by Sprightly Lass. Bonds Away just seems to loom up to horses and just doesn't quite want to put them away at this level. He had a quick rise to prominence, winning his way through his grades at the country and then beating Brave Smash at Caulfield last spring. But since then, it's just sort of loomed up and not quite put them away. So I think he needs a kill, needs to get a bit of confidence on the board. It was a good run. There was one of the best runs of the day here for mine, was from number 4, First Among Equals. Had absolutely no luck at Mornington last start when resuming in the Hariba Stakes. And again today on Saturday, has had no luck over the concluding stages or running into the race. It was a race dominated up on speed, with the first four in run running the first four places. So this horse ended up running fifth. He ran the best last 1,000 of the day in 55.40, and his last 200 of 11.58 was the best in the race. So very keen to follow First Among Equals going forward, Nadia.
Okay, so First Among Equals, one definitely to be following out of the race long term. We go to the 1,200 metre open, which was race number 8. Betting here, Rich Charm was the one the punters wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. $2.70 into $2.25 on race day. And again, another horse who started basically the same price on the exchange. So very, very firm. The other money came for Ashlaw, who was $10 at 11 a.m. and ended up jumping $5.50. But in spite of Paddy Maloney dropping the whip, the punters got the cash, Nadia, after having their fingers burnt in a couple of races earlier on the day.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the incident. Of course, Patrick did drop the whip throughout, and he did look a long way back.
He did. And look, I think the race caller, Terry Bailey, did a bit of a Kingston Town and gave him no chance of the 300-metre mark. But dug deep. Very good win. I think an expected win in this sort of grade for Rich Charm, having run so well in the Newmarket at his start prior. And just a fantastic story for racing. I love seeing Yedita Clark and the team there. There's just so much emotion and so much joy. This horse has now had the four goes of the track and distance for four wins. Loves the 1,200 metres at Caulfield. And look, as you say, it did look hopeless at the sort of 400 metre mark, but they haven't gone home in fast splits here. As I said, just for a bit of clarity, Self-Sense in the 2,000 metre race ran home quicker than Rich Charm for the last 600. So visually, I think it looked like he was going faster than he actually was. It was a bit more a case of the other horses tiring. But I think it was lucky that Paddy Maloney got to get those couple of strikes with the whip in, because listening to him on Correct Weight, he said the horse did respond to those couple of early bits of persuasion. So he'd probably reached top speed by the time he dropped the whip and was just coasting to the post to beat these. Ashlaw was pretty keen out three deep. As I said, they sort of just went at a moderate tempo for this bunch of horses. He was keen out three deep. I thought his run was okay. And Super Snob is probably the horse to follow out of the race. She was running into it quite well over the concluding stages when she got stopped in her tracks by Suspense. She was racing a long way out of her grade and very poorly weighted here. So wherever she goes next start, Super Snob, I think she's going to be extremely hard to beat, especially stepping up to 1,400 metres. It was a great run from her.
Okay, so that's a look at that race, and just going through the last 1,400 metre listed race, it was won by Fastnet Tempest. What were some of the key things here in the market? Of course, Land of Plenty ended up starting favourite.
Yeah, another DK Weir runner here who was very well backed in Land of Plenty, $3 into $2.60, and that was pretty much the only move of note. There was a little bit of support around to say that Fastnet Tempest, the ultimate winner, would run well, and he started around that $9 mark, Nadia.
Okay, what did you make of the race and Fastnet Tempest's performance?
Yeah, well, the race changed a lot when notification came through in the morning that the Answer My Friend was going to be ridden a little more quietly. Which ultimately did. He settled third. He'd led it the majority of his previous starts, and we'd been used to him going along at a decent clip. He didn't really appreciate that, but by the same token, the stable really needed to try something different because he didn't perform overly well when leading last start. So the jury's out with the Answer My Friend. He pulled himself into the ground, settling third. Rhythm to Spare led them up, kicked on well. They went along at a moderate tempo for this class of horse, and he was given every chance up on speed and nearly stole the race. But great ride here on Fastnet Tempest by Craig Williams. He saw they weren't going that fast. He took off well before the home bend at a time when Land of Plenty was actually in front of him. He whipped around the field, put Land of Plenty in a pocket, and that won the race. A good performance by this ex-UK galloper. He's a very good horse around that 1,400 metre mark and has shown an ability to handle tight tracks over in the UK, so it's no surprise to see him run well at Caulfield. Land of Plenty, slightly different scenario for this horse to Bendigo last start, where he was able to settle up on speed and just be right there coming around the home bend. I think we mentioned it in our review that they'd gone so slowly. It was a great ride by Benny Allen at Bendigo, whereas on Saturday he drifted back to midfield, just had that little bit more to do, and I think that's sort of where Land of Plenty's at. He is generally going to get back in his races. He finished off well, but yep, all honours with the winner, the Fastnet Tempest, and as I said, a super ride by Craig Williams to get him home.
Definitely. So what are the key performances from the weekend?
Yeah, I think race one, Evil Lil handles the wet. I thought that was an excellent first up run by her. I think race six, Temple of Bell, we can keep following. She's going very well. Race seven, First Among Equals, has had no luck at its first two runs this campaign, is ready to win. And then out of race eight, Super Snob, three-year-old filly, probably wants to step up a touch in distance next start to 1,400 metres, but wherever she goes, she's going to be very hard to beat.
Okay, so they are the key performances. What about throughout the week? Is there anything we need to be taking out of it?
Yeah, I think the best maiden winner of the week came up on Friday night, race two, three-year-old maiden, and Hotshot Harry, this horse trained by Henry Dwyer, formerly with Robert Smurden, I think has had a couple of starts, or had the one start, at least the one start for Henry Dwyer, and just obviously taking a little bit of time to acclimatise to the new training conditions. He was 1,300 metres back to 1,000 metres and absolutely belted them in extremely fast time at Cranbourne on Friday night. He ran a far quicker time than the benchmark 64, which was quite a strong race later in the night. So keen to follow Hot Shot Harry. I think there's a maiden win coming on for a horse called Lime Kilns, who made its debut at Pakenham on Thursday, trained by Mick Kent. It sat three wide on speed over 1,400 metres on debut and was probably beaten a neck. So I'm certainly following Lime Kilns. I think it'll win a maiden in the next couple of weeks. And one out of Sandown last week, Moana Jewel, she ran second to Platinum Angel in the benchmark 64 over 1,400 metres. She should have won that race. I think this is a very strong race going forward. So I think we can follow Moana Jewel, and it wouldn't surprise me to see her turn up in a Saturday race in the next fortnight, Nadia.
Okay, so there's a few key points of note to take out of the programs there from the weekend. Looks like it's we've got a pretty good week in front of us, Matt.
Yeah, we do. Flemington, I think the acceptances will be out soon, so I look forward to seeing that, and hopefully we can find a couple of winners, and then, yeah, I'm not sure where they're racing next Saturday, but of course all roads lead to Warrnambool next week, and really looking forward to the 3 days out there.
At Caulfield on Saturday. Anything for us today?
Look, race four at Echuca, I've had a small bet on number 13, Mariko Rico, first up. I think can get up on speed and be hard to run down. And race seven, I've backed both Flirtatious Femme and Mrs. Bignall. Flirtatious Femme has had three runs for the Archer camp. Trialled up quite nicely for this, its second campaign for the new stable. And Mrs. Bignall's been back to the jump out since having excuses at Terang last start. I think gets a good run from gate four, and the drop back to 1,100 metres on the fresh side probably suits. So race seven backs both one and two.
Wonderful, Matt. Always a pleasure. Good luck today, and we'll do it all again next Monday. Thank you.